Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 18, Text 20. Sarva bhuteshu yenaikam bhavam avyayam ikshate avibhaktam vibhakteshu tajjnanam vidhi sattvikam. That knowledge by which one undivided spiritual nature is seen in all living entities, though they are divided into innumerable forms, you should understand to be in the mode of goodness. Purport: a person who sees one spirit soul in every living being, whether a demigod, human being, animal, bird, beast, aquatic, or plant, possesses knowledge in the mode of goodness. In all living entities, one spirit soul is there, although they have different bodies in terms of their previous work. As described in the 7th chapter, the manifestation of the living force in every body is due to the superior nature of the Supreme Lord. Thus, to see that one superior nature, that living force in every body, is to see in the mode of goodness. That living entity is imperishable, although the bodies are perishable. Differences are perceived in terms of the body. Because there are many forms of material existence in conditional life, the living force appears to be divided. Such impersonal knowledge is an aspect of self-realization. Seeing a spiritual living being in every life form is knowledge in the mode of goodness, which Srila Prabhupada states here, that the idea of seeing that everything is one, because everything is spiritual, Srila Prabhupada writes here that such impersonal knowledge is an aspect of self-realization, to recognize their spirit in every living being. There's another verse which describes the perfection of seeing all living beings equally. It also begins with the word sarva bhuteshu. Sarva bhuteshu yah pashyat bhagavat bhavam atmanah bhutani bhagavat yatman yesha bhagavato tama. This is the vision of a topmost devotee who sees that every living being is a devotee of Krishna, ultimately. Yeah. He sees all living beings except himself as devotees. That's a very high level, not to be imitated. We who are kindly engaged by Srila Prabhupada in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's preaching mission, we have to see that people are not devotees, otherwise how can we preach? Preaching means to try and bring people to devotional service. Fiddling around with some little gadget is infinitely more interesting than listening to topics of Bhagavad Gita. Whatever it is, whatever little disturbance is there becomes infinitely more interesting. And if there's no disturbance, people tend to fiddle with their fingernails. Please try to listen. Okay. So preaching means we see others in different ways. There are gradations. The description of the topmost devotee is given, sarva bhuteshu yah pashyat bhagavat bhavam atmanah. And then after that, the description of the middle-level devotee is given. Ishvare tad adhineshu bhalisheshu dvishatsucha prema maitri kripo peksha yakaroti samadhyama. One who sees that there is God and offers his love to God. One who sees that there are devotees and makes friends with them. One who sees that there are non-devotees who are innocent and misguided, he's merciful to them, and also sees people are envious and avoids them. So that's a different vision. In other words, a preacher sees oneness inasmuch as he sees everyone is part and parcel of Krishna, but at the same time he doesn't see that everyone's at the same level of spiritual understanding. So this idea that we love everyone, we hear that a lot. That's considered very spiritual, right? We should just love everyone. Love everything. Don't do any harm to others. Well, a great proponent of that, of course, who was called Mahatma Gandhi. And he was known as, his name is practically connected with the word ahimsa. People, when they think of the word ahimsa, non-violence, they think of Mahatma Gandhi, or maybe they think of Buddha. And of course, Gandhi was also known to be a great fan of Bhagavad Gita. But he didn't love the British. He saw a difference. He wanted to get the British out of India. So he was very kind to the, what he'd christened the Harijans, who were formerly called Chandalas. So he changed a long-standing tradition and had them called as Harijans. And nowadays they're called Dalit. Dalit and Adivasi and all these. As if people who are born in a higher caste are not Dalit. Dalit means oppressed. So we're all oppressed by material nature. I should just stick to the Puranic words, but they don't want to be nice. They don't want to abuse others. They want to be nice to everyone. So his idea was that, well, his main goal in life, it seems, was to get the British removed from India. And he wasn't successful in that either. As Srila Prabhupada pointed out, and many people acknowledge, his campaign was going on for decades, but it wasn't until Subhash Chandra Bose organized the Indian National Army violence against the British that the British knew that now our time is up. So it wasn't a very practical idea, his non-violence. But the actual result of his doing so, his campaign ended the independence of India simultaneous with the division of India into India and Pakistan, which caused mass violence, horrific slaughter, very cruel. So if we'd have asked him that, well, you can have India, we can have the British out, but then the Muslims will be divided and there'll be this horrible slaughter of human beings, would he have agreed? What was more important to him? Of course, he couldn't foresee that. He thought everything would go nice and India would be one state free of the British and Hindu, Muslim, bhai bhai, by making some slogan, marching in the streets, making slogans saying Hindus and Muslims are brothers. Somehow or other, you're just going to overcome all that hatred in the heart. It's not such an easy thing. To overcome the hatred in the heart requires not political manipulation, not slogans, but it requires spiritual sadhana. And even Gandhi himself, like I say, he was against the British. So what was his realization, actually? Another example I can give on a much smaller scale is about my yoga teacher here. As part of my treatment in this Ayurvedic clinic, I have obligatory yoga teachings. The yoga teacher, and he comes every day, and, well, he's supposed to, but he doesn't turn up a lot of the time. And in the course of one of the One of the things he teaches, I don't think it's yoga actually, it's just something somewhere someone made up. You have to embrace yourself like this, and then you have to, he says, I don't say it. He says to me, you are peace. You are love. Okay, sounds nice. I'm not peace, I'm not love, but I might be peaceful and I might have some love, but it's not just an impersonal force. Peace and love, the feelings come from person. That's the difference between seeing everything as one and seeing everything just as one without any further clarification. Everything is one because everything is Krishna. He is number one. So that's really seeing everything as one. But I just know one day he was just coming in the main door and some beggar woman came, Muslim beggar woman, and he gave her 10 rupees or something. He gave something. And typically with beggars, she wasn't satisfied. She wanted more. They want to squeeze out as much as they find someone who's willing to give something, they try to squeeze out more. So he just closed the door on her. Closed the door in her face. So this idea of loving everyone, I mean, it's a small incident. It's not a big thing, but it just indicates that this idea that you are love, you're feeling love for everyone, how practical it is. If that beggar woman had said, well, if you love me, give me all your money. So he thinks, oh, I'm supposed to love everyone, and okay, I should. That will make her happy if I give her all the money. But he wouldn't make his wife happy. If he goes home and she says, okay, I need some money to buy dal and rice. And he said, well, I don't have any money because I gave it all to a beggar woman. She wouldn't be happy with him. And if he goes on doing that, then her love for him might just fade away altogether. So, in this material world, love for one person clashes with love for another. If one country is at war with another, then love for your country is expressed by hating the other party. You do your duty to your country. They made up this thing called nationalism. You show your love for your country by killing people from another country. Recently, I was in London, United Kingdom, and downtown Harinam Sankirtan, Piccadilly Circus. There's a big open place, and all kinds of people go there and do all kinds of things. And we were also going to Harinam Sankirtan there. So there was some guy lying on the road with an old torn coat and a bowl for begging. You know, beggars always make themselves look as down and out as they can. Probably when they go home, they change into a three-piece suit, but when they're out begging, seems to be a fairly good business. You don't really do any, well, it depends where you are. This guy was just lying in the road, and he had a sign there, "Where is the love?" And then people fell, oh, the idea is to make people feel, oh, if I have love, I have to give him some money. Ah, you see, he knows the little switch to get people, to get money out of people. He doesn't love, but he wants to extract money from people by making them feel guilty that if you love me, you have to give me some money. And of course, he had a dog with him. In the West, whenever there are beggars staying in one place, they usually have a dog with them, because that makes people feel, how does it work out that people think, oh, he's got a dog, he must be a good person because he has a dog, and he has to feed his dog also, so I better give him some money. Somehow or other, the dog invokes feelings of compassion, maybe more than the human being. Anyway, the point I'm making is, or trying to make here, is that love in this material world is conditional. You can't love everyone in the way that they may want you to love them. Same thing. If you love the beggar in the way that she wants you to love her, then your wife won't love you. If you love a country, then you have to be against another country. That's the general understanding. So it feels all nice if you say, I am love, I am love, all is love, all is love. Feels very nice, but it has no practical application. And actually, love in this material world means there's a competition, as is very well known in India, and there are innumerable jokes, and probably there in the cinema, there must be innumerable sketches of the Sas Bahu, the mother of the newly married man, who is the mother-in-law to the new wife. And there's a competition between the wife and the mother. The mother previously had the son. His love was for her. But now there's a competition, his wife. And so there's always some pulling and some kind of competition there. There's competition for love. So real love means love for Krishna. Then we can love everyone. And our love for everyone might be expressed by chastisement also. As I was just listening to Srila Prabhupada just now, I was listening, talking about Lord Ram, who as the king would chastise if necessary, but the people, they saw him like a father, and his chastisement was understood to be like that of a father, not the nasty chastisement of a Hiranyakashipu, but the corrective, concerned chastisement of a father. The result in many ways might be the same. That if there is a strong king who maintains law and order by punishing wrongdoers, then whether he does it out of love or out of nastiness, he just wants to keep everything under control so that he can show his power and get on with his life without being disturbed. Keep the unruly elements down so they don't try and usurp my position. So with whatever the attitude is, the result is the same, that law and order is maintained in the state. But law and order is not all in all. There should be love also. And of course, Lord Ramachandra's chastisement, or to be under Lord Ram, means that that is the perfection of life in and of itself, to be under the protection of Lord Ram. So the idea of loving everyone, seeing everyone equally, there has to be some practical considerations also. Otherwise, if you say that, well, you take from the rich and give to the poor, but as Srila Prabhupada quoted when speaking with some Christian priests in Detroit, and the Christian priests were pressing Srila Prabhupada that, what's your movement doing to help the poor? And Srila Prabhupada fired back at them that, well, even your Jesus, he says that the poor will always be with us. You can try and make everyone the same at the same level, but by the arrangement of nature, there will always be strong and weak, rich and poor, beautiful and ugly. This is the world of duality. In my childhood, I was fond of reading books about William. William is an imaginary figure, as in all novels. Well, there are historical novels also, but most novels have imaginary figures. So he was a young boy in a English middle-class household in the 1920s. But he was a bit of a maverick, even though he was from a middle-class family. He was a bit wild. So in those days, the word communist wasn't so prominent as the word Bolshevik. And it was a big thing in the world, the Bolsheviks, because the Bolsheviks had taken power in Russia. So in England also, there were people who called themselves Bolsheviks. And William's elder brother fancied himself to be a Bolshevik. And then he would go around talking about, we have to take away from the rich and give to the poor, and everyone should be equal. I can't remember exactly it was. It was a long time since I read it. But then William thought, well, he's got a nice camera and a nice watch. And so William took it and messed it all up. And his brother was really upset. And William said, well, that's what you're talking about, isn't it? I didn't have those things, and you had it, so I took it from you and used it for myself. And that was the end of his brother's Bolshevikism or communism. So it just stuck in my mind, because I mean, I must have read so many things in my childhood, but stuck in my mind the impracticality of trying to make everything absolutely one. This verse that we just read that talks about oneness, but it's a qualified oneness. There is Krishna, who is above everyone else. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam eko Eko bahunya vidatati kama. There are innumerable living beings. They're all eternal, they're all conscious, but there's one who's above them all. And the one who's above them all is supplying all the others and fulfilling their desires. And even within all the others, it's not just there's Krishna and there's everyone else. There are gradations also. There are conditioned souls and liberated souls. Among the liberated souls, there are Vaikuntha Vasis and Ayodhya Vasis and Dwarka Vasis and Mathura Vasis, Vrajavasis. In the Vrajavasis, there are gradations all the way up to Radharani. So it's not that everyone is one in all respects. There's variety also. So these people who just promote love, 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 love all, without giving a clear understanding of how we can actually do that by putting Krishna in the center of love, they're either gross sentimentalists or just out-and-out cheaters. And whatever they are, they're speaking way above their level of realization. Because how to practically implement that loving all? What is the high level of realization? The high level of realization is to understand that there is Krishna. He is the one who is overseeing everything else. And we should love all living beings because they're all part and parcel of Krishna. And one who's actually realized just doesn't realize it intellectually, but he actually feels like that. Atmopam yena sarvatya samam pashati yojana sukham yavadi yadivadu kam sayogi paramo smitaha mataha. Krishna says, I consider the highest yogi one who experiences himself that in terms of the body and mind there is happiness and distress. And he realizes that others also feel like that, and so he treats them accordingly. Sees them as one with himself. Why should I inflict pain on others when I know that I myself experience so much pain? So the practical application of seeing all living beings as one is not to hold a seminar charging people lots of money to come and feel love as often these people do. I mean, they're really professional cheaters, many of them. And it's amazing how people who are successful in business or in their professional life, so many of them, they can get cheated by these pseudo-spiritual gangsters who charge lots of money to talk a lot of nonsense, and then people feel love, and it's all imaginary. But the manifestation, the practical application of seeing all living beings as one, that in this, I quoted the Sarvabhuteshu Yapashed Bhagavad Bhavam Atmanaha. Bhutani Bhagavatyatman Yesha Bhagavatotama. The Bhagavatotama Uttama Bhakta sees all living beings as one. He sees them all full of feelings for Krishna. Practically, how we, who we are now and what we're doing now in the world, have to see all as one is like this, on the level of the Madhyam Adhikari. That Ishvare tadadhineshu balisheshu dvishatsucha. Prema maitri kripopeksha yah karoti samadhyama. We should see there is Krishna. We try to develop our love for Krishna. We see there are devotees of Krishna. We make friendship with them. We see there are non-devotees. We try to help them to become situated in devotional service. Apart from those who are envious, out-and-out demons, and we avoid them. So this is practical for us. Otherwise, if we just try to see, oh, everyone's engaged in Krishna consciousness, everything is wonderful, everything is bliss, that's impractical for living in this world. We find the topmost devotees who have this outlook, they totally withdraw from this world. Those who have to preach Krishna consciousness, they're involved with this world. So they're realistic people, not impractical people. So sometimes it's said that the topmost devotee, even though he's on the topmost level, he acts as if on the middle level for the sake of benefiting others. We can't benefit others as well as we can. We can't benefit others in the best way unless we get involved with them and try to help to pick them up. But then we have to see they need picking up. Great devotee like Haridas Thakur, he can just chant and that will benefit the whole world. But he was also preaching. So, Hare Krishna. Any question about this? Comment? Like to say anything? All right then. Vancha kalpataru bhyascha kripa sindhu vyavacha putitanam pavane bhyo. Vaishnave bhyo namo namaha.